Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name's Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris Rocchio.
Hello, everyone.
Today we're chatting all things reverse dieting. But before we get into today's episode, Chris is going to read a five-star review from one of our listeners.
Yeah, this one's titled Very Motivating from Theodora LaRusque. I'm a food and nutrition student at SDSU, and I find this podcast extremely motivating. I've been following Amanda on Instagram for years, but only just started listening to this podcast since the past week. I had my son last year, and my health habits have declined tremendously since then. It's been a good way to put myself back into the, quote, health-centered mindset while being productive. I sometimes even listen while working out. I love that the information is provided in an understandable way, and if it isn't, Amanda reiterates.
Thank you so much for that review. And I love that double whammy of working out and listening to a podcast. Sometimes I do that if I'm in the right mood and I don't need the pump up music.
Yeah, I do too.
So thank you so much. If you guys could take a moment to write a review, like I always say, it means so much to Chris and I, and it really helps keep this podcast going.
Yeah, and it's some good feedback too, because maybe I need to, not be so heady with my explanations.
We like that you bring the headiness, Chris. We appreciate it.
Oh, okay. All right, so getting into this episode, you may or may not have heard of reverse dieting. We had talked about it, or at least briefly mentioned it in our previous podcast episode on our fat loss tips, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it in depth because we were kind of like pushing our time limit that we'd like to hit. So we wanted to give you a quick blitz episode and give you the rundown of this useful tool. And advocates of this plan claim that it can boost energy levels, reduce hunger, restore metabolic rate, and help you break through those weight loss plateaus.
And contrary to what the name sounds like, reverse dieting is not the opposite of dieting. It's a very specific method that you have to follow meticulously for it to work well. It's not like, you know, you get to binge all out or eat whatever you want. That's not how it works. I wish that was how it works,
right?
But alas, it's not that way. But there are so many benefits to doing it this way, and Chris and I are really going to walk you through how to do it properly and who it's really a good fit for.
So just to give you a quick definition, reverse dieting is the process of slowly and methodically increasing your calories over a period of time to repair your metabolic health. And this would happen following a diet. So specifically following a prolonged caloric deficit. And it kind of depends on how long that deficit is, how much of a deficit you're in. So, but no matter what, if it is too long or too much of a deficit, you will see some metabolic changes, which we'll get into in a little bit. It's called a metabolic adaptation. But we want to quickly talk about the three main types of people that this would be effective for. So first you would be, and this is the community that it became popular in, is your bodybuilding or athletic community. And these are people that, you know, say you've worked hard towards your goal. You just finished, cutting and getting down to your target weight, and you're legit, you're good, you've just competed, and you want to now reintroduce some calories back into your diet, but you don't want to immediately like get back to maintenance level or above and then immediately just put on a whole bunch of fat. So it's a method for you to restore your metabolic health, ramp up your metabolism again, while also minimizing fat loss. And your second type of person that this would work for is, say you're in that same situation, you have low body fat, you've been training like crazy, you have a good regimen, you have a good nutrition plan, but you're not quite at your goal just yet. You have a little bit of stubborn body fat. So in this situation, again, you could implement this and maybe see you getting over that plateau.
So the third type of person that you would see this be a good fit for is someone who had a lot of weight to lose. So, you know, they've been in a calorie deficit for at least 3 months. Maybe it's getting on 6 months now. They're not quite at their goal weight, but, you know, they've seen a lot of progress in the beginning, and now they're seeing that progress really slow down. They're stressed out. They just need a break from being in this really long-term calorie deficit. You know, maybe it's been even like a year. So at that point, it'd be a great time to introduce the reverse diet.
Well, I mean, you also have some chronic dieters. I mean, think about the kind of people that have been dieting for years and years.
Yes, the yo-yo dieters too. Like this would work well for too, except for, you know, with a yo-yo dieter, you might need to do reverse dieting for a longer period of time if you've been yo-yo dieting for like years.
Yeah, I mean, if you've been doing that for years, you most likely need to put in implement this for 4 more years. I mean, it's not just going to correct itself over 3 months. I mean, we had talked about in our previous podcast where people from the show The Biggest Loser, you had contestants seeing metabolic changes for up to, I think, 6 years afterwards. Yeah, 6 years afterwards. I mean, you also have to understand that they went in a drastic caloric deficit because they were trying to win this competition. And, you know, some of them lost, like, I think what the average was like over 100 pounds was the average weight loss for all of the contestants. So some of them well over 120 pounds, 150.
Wow.
So it was very drastic, but nonetheless, I mean, 6 years to get that realized change in metabolic rate. So again, it's going to be one of those things where you have to be patient with it. And that's why implementing this tactic is kind of a good way to give yourself a break, because sooner or later, once you hit these plateaus, they can become very discouraging. Yeah. Say for instance, like a highly restrictive diet over 6 months, and it seems very effective for the first, let's just say, 3 months of it. And then just a little bit tapers off a little bit after 4 months. But then on the 5th and 6th month, you start to absolutely flatten out in terms of your progress. It probably means that there's some adjustments you need to make, that you're probably a little bit in too much of a deficit in the first 3 months. And not only that, but you also have to remember the fact that when you're losing weight, you're also decreasing your BMR, because it takes less energy just to operate, you know, normal bodily functions at a lower weight. So you're going to have to adjust. So say you had some significant body fat and you came in and you lost 25 pounds. Well, your 20% caloric deficit is no longer a 20% deficit. You have to go down even further because your metabolic rate decreased with your weight. So you gotta constantly track, readjust, especially, you know, every 5 pound, 10 pound fluctuation, you're going to have to adjust.
I think the good news with reverse dieting is if you feel really stuck in this low calorie bracket, the good news here is if you do it the right way, you can end up in a much higher zone with putting on very little body fat, you know, maybe improving your body composition. So that's really the good news with reverse dieting. And again, this may not apply to someone like maybe you only did like a slight deficit for a little bit and then you feel comfortable going back up to your maintenance. And you really know your maintenance. But the deal with this is it also really helps you figure out what your maintenance levels are. So this is a good method for kind of like, you know, figuring out yourself throughout this whole process.
All right, just to summarize in short. So basically, this is designed for people that are in a caloric deficit for a while. They want to increase their metabolic rate and get back to a baseline caloric range that they were before while minimizing body fat. I mean, think about it. If you're eating below your baseline for a long period of time, your body perceives that as a signal that food is scarce. And your body is very adaptive, so it adapts to this by making you essentially more efficient with your energy use. But the problem is that you would think that efficiency is good, right? But the real effect of that is, in the long run, this means your metabolism slows down and your BMR decreases.
Great, we get the short end of the stick. No, but I mean, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and that's what I do like about this method, and hearing how it's worked really well for some of my friends, for other colleagues. It definitely piqued my interest.
Yeah, and just to give you some background on the change in metabolism, there's a study in 2014, and it says, quote, energy restriction is accompanied by changes in circulating hormones, mitochondrial efficiency, and energy expenditure that serve to minimize the energy deficit, attenuate weight loss, and promote weight regain. So this is just one study reporting the effects of dieting. But what's interesting in terms of reverse dieting is the recommendation and the conclusion. So they say, quote, it is recommended to approach weight loss in a stepwise, incremental fashion, utilizing small energy deficits to ensure a slow rate of weight loss. Participation in structured resistance programs and adequate protein intake are also imperative. More research is needed to verify the efficacy of periodic refeeding and reverse dieting in supporting prolonged weight reduction and attenuating post-diet fat accretion. So this is great in terms of giving us the, you know, the foundation for the theory of reverse dieting. And there's a lack of controlled trials specifically on reverse dieting, but theoretically it makes sense when you take these metabolic adaptations into effect, and which have been proven in studies, as I just said. But most of the other evidence for reverse dieting is either anecdotal or it's derived from trials with say like a handful or a group of participants or athletes, but not a big enough sample size for it to be published and things like that. But it is well known and widely used in fitness competition circles, and it's been effective. It's been proven effective.
Absolutely.
So as you can see in these studies, I mean, obviously you can have metabolic adaptations that go on the way down in terms of slowing your metabolism, but they can also go up. So I've already talked about the changes in energy expenditure when it comes to reductions in weight, but this increase in calorie intake may boost your metabolism as well in terms of hormones, because you can burn more through this non-exercise activity thermogenesis, called NEAT in short, which are things like walking, talking, fidgeting, and things like that. But with the hormones, it's you can actually have a change in levels of like leptin and ghrelin. So for instance, there was one study that showed a 6 month calorie restriction had a 44% decrease in leptin levels. So you don't want that to be a permanent thing. So what this does is kind of reverses that and moves it back on its way up.
So just to remind you guys, the leptin hormone is your satiety hormone. So you actually do want more of that to help you, you know, feel fuller when you're eating. So a 44% decrease is not a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's why restrictive eating can actually eventually lead to binge eating, because you're depriving yourself for such a long period of time. And it downregulates those leptin levels because your body's telling yourself like, hey, you're not giving me what I need. So I'm obviously not going to be sending you the signal to stop eating, because I need more. And
right.
So it's basically trying to find a new equilibrium. And in that process, it's your weight that has to suffer.
Wow, that's super crazy. Well, so to give you guys a specific example of how reverse dieting would work, what people typically do is increase their calories by 50 calories per week. So say you're at a calorie deficit, like we said, for a long period of time, and it's 1400, you're at 1400 calories. So week one, you would increase it by 50 up to 1450. Week two, you get up to 1500, and you'd keep increasing those levels until you find about what your maintenance level would be. So, you know, like, let's just say it's about 1800. And then when you increase your calories to 1850, you see yourself start to gain weight, then you want to bring that back down to 1800. And that would be about your maintenance level. And so hopefully this whole time you're either maintaining weight, maybe losing a little bit of weight. Yeah, that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, the good thing about this is that even when you're in the reverse dieting protocol, you're still going to be in a deficit for the majority of the time, right? So let's just say it takes you 6 weeks to get up to what your maintenance calorie level is. Well, for those first 5 weeks, you're in much less of a caloric deficit than you were before, but you're still in a deficit. So you could actually continue to see a little bit more weight loss. And then with the achieving the maintenance level thing, it's going to require a little bit of tracking, because like we said before, your baseline caloric level is not going to be what it was before you started. So that's where you're going to have to find the new equilibrium. You could be able to put all of your info into one of these calorie and macro calculators online. It could spit you out the correct energy level, or it could be completely off because of these changes in metabolic hormones. You don't know. So that's where individual tracking is going to come into play. And that's going to be a little bit of the annoying, meticulous part of this. But again, you're trying to correct months and possibly years of problems and detriments that you've built up over a long period of time. So if you want to change it, if you want to prioritize your health, you know, this is just one of the methods that you have to do, or that you can implement. So, you know, these are things like, in terms of guides, you can use scales, measurements, clothes. You know, what are some other things that you would recommend as guides if you don't want to be tied?
I mean,
to a
photos
scale?
Are always a good idea too. You know, taking photos of yourself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do like measurements and clothes. The scale is not bad, of course. It's just, it's nice to have the other measurements because, you know, your weight could be going up slightly, but your body fat's going down. And that's a happy place to be in.
Yeah. And just to keep in mind is that if you are using the scale, which is not bad, but if you don't want to be obsessive with it, there's other ways. But if you are using a scale, you are going to have certain fluctuations from day to day. And depending on what your size is, I mean, these things can be, you know, like 5 pound fluctuations for some people. Like if you're,
oh, yeah, that's
if you're
my friend Hank. He's well, yeah. just his height. He's so yeah. tall. Like his fluctuations are mm-hmm. like crazy.
Yeah. So the bigger you are, the more possibility for holding more water weight. If you're not regimented on how many times a day you're eating or what times a day you're eating, you're going to have a different reading early in the morning, because usually they tell you to weigh yourself before your breakfast, before everything, right in the morning. But let's just say you haven't had a bowel movement because you ate pizza at midnight the night before. So it's going to fluctuate, but let's just say you're regimented and you're pretty regular on how about the times that you're eating in the day and how much you're eating, then you can be somewhat consistent, but factor in the fluctuations with it. And it's best to take weekly averages.
Yeah.
And once you're at a caloric level that maintains your weight, stay there for a few weeks and let your body adjust to that new level. Stay there for a month. You know, some advocates of this plan, like we said before, will tell you to stay on this for years at a time to correct the years and years of damage you put on your body. It's everybody's going to be different, and you may want to speak to a nutrition coach with this. But if you do have to implement it for years at a time, you may want to give yourself a little bit of a break, do like little mini cuts in between, so you're not just constantly at maintenance. Obviously, you still want to be in that deficit and want to still continue to lose body fat. So you don't want to stay at the maintenance the whole time. But bottom line is that you're actually making a short-term sacrifice in your fat loss for a long-term metabolic change that's going to affect your fat loss and help your fat loss in the long run, if that makes sense. So again, it's a short-term sacrifice, but I really think that it will be beneficial. And if you're hitting that plateau, then this might be the perfect thing for you.
So you're probably wondering at this point, you know, we're telling you to add about 50 calories per week. You know, where should those calories come from? So when you're in a deficit, your protein should already be high. So make sure your protein is already high enough. With that in mind, really the best place we see across the board recommendations from all the other experts in this field is to really get your calories from added carbohydrates. Sure, you can mix in some fat here and there, but really the majority of your calorie additions every week should be coming from carbohydrates. I mean, who doesn't love carbohydrates? I know Chris loves his carbs. He loves his watermelon. He loves his pasta. He loves his white rice. So it's a great time to do that. And honestly, we've heard, you know, you'll have the best energy levels overall when you're really getting those increased calories from carbs.
Yeah. And obviously once you're back up into like week 4 and 5, there's going to be some additional added fat, but you don't have to do as much, and you can do the bulk of it in carbs. It's not mandatory. It's just what's been reported as the best approach for limiting fat gain. So, and I mean, like we were talking about before, it's not just energy levels with your training. It's overall energy levels during the day. I mean, think about your self-induced hangriness and mood swings that come from, like, when you're dealing with your family, your friends, or people at work. Being in a deficit, especially in fat loss, is because they always talk about trying to minimize the amount of insulin spikes. So a lot of people talk about the low carb fat loss diet. So in that situation, your mood's down. You're having those mood swings. You have that sugar craving because you have a lack of blood sugar, and you got that brain fog as a result. Everybody's experienced it, and so what this does, it kind of ramps those mental and physical energy levels up. So makes that caloric deficit, that dieting, so to speak, a lot more sustainable in the long run.
So in conclusion, we wanted to go through some of the benefits of reverse dieting and some of the biggest takeaways. So what you'll find with reverse dieting is that you'll be less likely to binge eat. You're basically getting away from too restrictive diets because you're increasing your calories. You're going to see increased energy levels. You're going to see reduced hunger. You're going to restore your metabolic rate, digestion returns to normal, and it's going to help you break through some of those weight loss plateaus. Now, remember, because you do need to do diligent tracking, it really has to be like 50 calories per week that you're going to need to plan ahead when you're traveling, going to parties, going out to dinner. So this really is a fit for someone who's willing to put in the tracking work.
Yeah, maybe when you're going out to dinner, kind of look up the place that you're going to be visiting and see what they have on the menu so you can incorporate that properly. A lot of menus nowadays at least have a calorie level or a calorie count. You can't really break down macros, but you can kind of eyeball it and guesstimate. I don't really like using the word guesstimate. I can't believe I just used it just there. And then if you're going to events or parties, maybe do an intermittent fast. And so you don't eat the first part of the day. And that way, you know that you're going to be somewhat going crazy later on at the party. That might be an effective way to do that. Also, if you know you're going over or if you went over the day before, just adjust your calorie level the next day or for the rest of the week, because again, this is a long average. You can take weekly averages. So if you go over one day, you can go under the next 2-3 days, and it'll all work itself out as long as you're staying on top of it and correcting for any days that you kind of fall off.
So we hope you really enjoyed this Blitz episode. Let us know what you think. If you'd like to see more of them, you can hit me up at Meow Mikes, or you can hit Chris up at Chris Braccio. We so look forward to chatting with you guys every week, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Bye.
Yep. See you.